all our history of royalty.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think. A no strings attached and no additional charges, off the cuff and from the hip, educated yet speculative, often evergreen, topical heatwave of a weekly conversation turned podcast in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, social media, culture, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter, at Bloated Nemesis, and I have with me always and forever my friend, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at GreenWeird, which is green underscore WYRD. This episode, we have our weekly intro segment, Weak Thoughts, an overview of AFRICOM and the role of the U.S. military on the African continent, and a review of Cupcake's new album, Effervize, in our hip-hop test drive. Prepare to get riled up and well-rested. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Homeland Security Secretary is talking to the Senate today about shitholes or shithouses, I guess.
Difference without distinction.
Hopefully they're asking her other questions. I mean, not that that doesn't warrant time, but...
So, Ms. Secretary, what's your opinion on the controversial, or continuing the controversial practice of internal checkpoints within the mainland United States?
I don't recall.
Uh-huh. So you don't recall ever hearing about this, or you're still thinking about that Norway comment?
I like how in her, the little bits I was seeing of her testimony, she was like, well, I don't remember the president saying that, but what I recall him saying, and then she makes him sound, like, engaged and intelligent. And I'm like, that's how I know you're lying. Like, no, he was not saying those words. He was saying shitholes, something about shitholes and AIDS or something. That sounds way more like the Trump I know.
Yeah, right? Well, we don't even hear him. Like, I was looking at this list of, press conferences in the first year that somebody posted earlier.
Oh yeah, you know, I saw
fucking
that.
HW did 27 press conferences in his first year. Like even W did 4. Like, and he was allergic to the media. You can't put Donald Trump in front of a microphone and have him and expect him to sound coherent, so they don't let him. He gives interviews, sure, but no press conferences. Certainly nothing adversarial.
Yeah, and he gives speeches, but. Even the one press conference was just,
it got ugly.
Yeah, it got ugly, and they're like, okay, well, never mind. Not going to do that one again. No, he's one of the least publicly accountable presidents I can remember. Although I think the last two haven't been terribly either. I don't think Obama or W really engaged at a level that presidents used to.
I think Obama at least had double digits. It was at least 11.
Yeah, HW, it said 27.
Damn,
well,
dude.
I'm trying to think what was going on. I mean, the recession hit, I guess, in 89, right? End of the Cold War. I know the SNL thing came back to bite us in the ass, and there was a recession that hit in 89. And I don't remember if it was the Berlin Wall in 89, but...
Yeah, that was Berlin.
Okay. Well, I mean, but either way, Russia was crumbling at this point in 89, or the USSR. He didn't really have his own controversies, per se, but it was tumultuous. That's the only reason I can get... I mean, it's weird that he did a lot of press conferences. He must have been pretty confident. I was just listening to something about Reagan recently, where he did those Oval Office... addresses to the nation, mm-hmm. Which has Trump... Did he do one of those? Did he do one because of Syria? I can't remember. He's done one.
I think he does the... He continues the weekly address thing on the weekend, but I don't think he's ever... No, he addressed the country once, you're right. When he attacked Syria with those cruise missiles he was getting paid for.
Yeah, Trump doesn't do that a lot, although that's a little bit gone out of style anyway, I think, because as we've gotten more cable stations and internet media, it's less relevant to go on, you know, the networks and...
Yeah, you're only reaching a certain market that way.
It would be nice. I mean, I think that'd be
I like that sort of thing. But Reagan, anyway, Reagan apparently did that a lot. But he didn't do a lot of press conferences because he wasn't great thinking on his feet. He was an actor, you know? He was right. Excellent at rehearsal. And it's not to, like, even say he was stupid. That's not at all what I mean. He just wasn't...
practiced.
He wasn't an improv actor. Mm-hmm. I guess even in meetings, he would have note cards. Like, in a private meeting, he would have a note card for, like... Which I could actually really relate to. Like, okay, I just got to make sure I get over the... You know, go over these points.
I mean, I guess I have notes in front of me here, but that's a little bit different.
But yeah, anyway, it's interesting, the different presidential styles, and it just seems like this one is the worst by any metric.
Right. I remember spending the W years thinking it can't get possibly worse. Oh, how naive.
I know, we were just... I think
we were up in arms.
I think we were just... it just shows how, like, even though we thought it was so terrible, how just inherently... optimistic in a weird way we were.
Like, yeah, right. It can only get better.
Yeah, I felt that I was really cynical and pessimistic about the American way and our system and even, you know, into Obama and then before W, but it wasn't nearly enough.
No.
It couldn't get worse.
Well, speaking of getting worse, I guess what's lead right into the budget discussion, huh?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's comes up in 3 days? Friday, I think?
Yeah.
I mean, as far as I know, no headway is being made. I mean, there might be some stuff behind closed doors going on, hopefully, but...
Well, they were trying to have that huge meeting in front of cameras the other... What was it, last week?
Was that last week?
Yeah, that was only last week.
Yeah. Oh, God. I was just thinking how, since our last episode, if I were to go over all the news that's happened, we'd have hit our 2 hours. And
yeah, it's tough to pare down, but let's get to some of the high points.
But anyway, yes, they had that meeting. They're trying to talk about keeping the government open. DACA, as we've talked about on the pod, has become a big issue for this.
Football.
And... I am getting an impression that the Democrats are going to hold firm on it.
I'm getting a different impression, because what was it, like 19 different Democrats were basically indicated the strategic willingness to forego DACA, just let it go entirely?
I did not see that.
Here, let me find a source. But yeah, I get the feeling that there will... But even more, like, both sides, like, the fact that it's a point of negotiation, they're both turning it into a political football, and it's just that the Democrats are trying to be right on the issue.
I don't think the Democrats would have had broad support for any immigration bill, though, that doesn't keep the Dreamers here.
I don't think we should go for any immigration for the way Trump is trying to cut it. I mean, cutting, like, the lottery program, the family, or the chained migration, as they're calling it.
What is that? What I don't want to get a bunch of, like, alt-right Google alerts if I look that up. Can you just tell me what that is?
Okay, so...
I've avoided this Google search.
The lottery immigration system was a program that we put in, like, I think sometime during the Cold War, because in brighter days, we recognize diversity and people coming from different places as a source of strength to an American culture and character.
Oh, sweet,
like,
summer
we
child.
We need that diversity. And so that's what it was. It's like we give a certain number of visas away in certain countries so that those people can come over here and enjoy the sweet life of America and help us make ourselves better by bringing their character and making it part of our own.
That's a good summary of the positive benefits of immigration, or at least some of them.
And that's what the lottery system was designed to do specifically. Like, people could apply for immigration, and if their number gets drawn out of a hat, basically, they can come to America, which is kind of fucked up in a different way if you think about it, compared to how our ancestors came here. But that's neither here nor there. Well, I guess it is here. The the chained migration, as they're calling it, is something that would keep, like, say, the Dreamers. If they became American citizens, their parents would be eligible to stay in the United States.
Oh, so you're saying it's a pro-family.
Yeah, it's for if people who are like, America is great, I want to bring my family here so we can all enjoy the benefits.
So the way I understand it is if you're against this so-called chained migration, then you're anti-family and you want a bunch of children without their mothers or fathers.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Or you want to, like, irrevocably separate extended families because, you know, grandparents aren't coming over to America except to visit, maybe.
To be honest, I'm glad you explained this because the way I thought it was, just based on the name, was the concept of, you know, someone comes here, their family members, it's easier for their family members then to come.
In a way, yes, but that's oversimplifying it, I think.
Well, I mean, but that's the way it was done in the old days, too.
Yeah. Well, in the old days, it was like you just showed up on a goddamn boat.
Well, yeah. No, but I think in my family, my one great-grandfather came over here a couple of years, and then, you know, before, then my great-grandmother and I think one of the kids came over. That's a pretty common story back in the day. You get someone here, they
find out it's okay, and then people are like, okay, then we'll go.
But that was why you'd have whole towns from, like, Eastern Europe and shit like that come here, is because, you know, they I don't know if it was a formal paperwork process, but they'd, like, sort of sponsor other migrants from their extended family or from their towns they were from.
Right.
And they'd have a place to come when they got here.
And that harkens back to an older time in the immigration system where you had to have a sponsor to come here.
Oh, okay, that was a thing. You had to have a sponsor. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was a way of... after the nativists got more of a chokehold on American immigration policy, right about the turn of the 20th century, they put on those sponsorship requirements.
Yeah, that would have been shortly after that some of my family started coming.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's bring it back to compromising with Trump on this budget thing. The fact... Any willingness to compromise with Trump should just be left on its face. Like, don't give them what they want. Like, don't... You're going to agree to... They're about to agree to extra security measures so that certain people can be allowed to continue to be here. Not that their parents will be allowed to continue even, but just those people. Again, making them a huge political football. Like, holding their lives and... other people's hands just for political points, I guess? Just seems sick on its face.
So, do they only need a majority vote in the Senate to keep it open?
They're voting on a continuing resolution, which means they might need 60 votes.
Oh, so that's why they need some Democrats. Okay.
Right.
Okay. I'd like to live in a world with some compromise, and I know he's a terrible person to compromise with, but it shouldn't get muddled down in his bullshit. And once that starts happening, then I'm totally with you. And granted, that's pretty much inevitable with Trump, is that it'll get muddled down in bullshit.
Well, it's already getting muddled. Like they're holding the military hostage for DACA, which is something that almost literally came out of his mouth or out of his Twitter feed, word for word.
Yeah, no, he's totally disingenuous. He's a terrible negotiator. I'm all for starting the process in a traditional bipartisan legislative negotiation, with that mindset. But once he starts getting involved with his whatever it is this time, tweets that torpedo things, which he's done before, by the way. He does regularly. So once that starts happening, yeah, I'd pull back and be like, fine, you want our votes, I'd draw a line in the sand. And...
I mean, I think that's what that meeting last week was when, you know, they let the cameras in for that full hour. Like, that's what that meeting basically was, and the fact that he was like, or Kevin McCarthy, rather, was like, actually, Mr. President, we can't forego security concerns. After Trump was like, whatever, just put a bill in front of me, I'll sign it.
Well, and then the hardliners took control.
Yeah, the hardliners are holding our whole country hostage in some ways to make sure that they get what they want out of everything.
See, and that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. Like, once they start playing hardball, then the Democrats, with a unified front, should play hardball back. Because the Democrats are a bigger voting bloc, if they stick together, than just the hardliners. And that'll put those moderates, the moderate Republicans, which is, albeit a dwindling number, but it'll put them in a position where they have to choose. And some of them are going to start choosing the Democrats. And that's going to put pressure on the president. And you know, absolutely, they don't like him. Even if they been voting a lot, they don't like him.
Like, let's draw a line in the sand and see where those moderate Republicans, or which side those moderate Republicans want to stand on. Like, after all the reading I did about MLK and his speeches this weekend, it's kind of getting tough to the point. Like, that's what I see compromise with Trump as. It's like, that's not even close to resisting, like, the terrible things that we know he's doing. That's just giving into it. So, yeah, let's call these people out for their high Trump scores. It's like, if you're willing to go along with this, then you have to be... let it be known that you are going along with this.
Yeah, especially then on something that has... You know, the polling numbers I've seen for DACA are exceptionally high. This is not...
Right up there with Medicare.
It goes beyond normal partisan divides, although I'm sure it's higher amongst Democrats. But it's well above 50. I think I saw something in the 70s for a number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the type of numbers you don't see a lot nowadays. And when you have that kind of support, I think you can stick to your guns. If they were talking about something, I'm trying to think of something that's a little more partisan. Like, the Democrats shouldn't stick to their guns, so to speak, right now, pun intended, about gun control, let's say, for example. You know, 50-50, and, you know, that's not something they should be, the Democrats should be setting the line in the sand on when it comes to, like, keeping the government open, is what I'm saying. But if it's something where they have 70% of the population, if they have even a number of Republicans, at least behind closed doors, but even some in the open, including the president himself, by the way, has gone back and forth on the issue, though. I mean, he said he was trying to get a clean DACA bill in that meeting last week with Feinstein until fucking McCarthy stuck his nose in and it's like, oh, no.
Actually, Mr. President.
It's like they just have to, like trick Stephen Miller into, like, hey, you won a prize, and then lock him in a closet for a couple weeks. And they could probably get a clean bill passed.
And I was okay with it up until, like, this morning. Well, I mean, I've known John Kelly, Trump's chief of staff, as kind of a hardliner. I mean, because he took the DHS job under Trump, so...
Well, and you mean when it comes to immigration?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was the general of, what do they call it, the Latin American...
Southern Command.
Southern Command general, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, he's just as much as a hardliner as Stephen Miller is, so if we want to, like, remove this hardline immigration nonsense and this nativist bullshit, for lack of a better term, we'd have to, like, dig deep into, like, the workings of the Trump administration to start pulling people out.
So you're saying my plan to trick them into a closet probably is just we'd need too many closets.
Yeah, we'd have to, like, just chain the doors of the White House shut and cut off their communications, yeah. And then block the escape tunnels across Pennsylvania Avenue to the OEB.
Is anything else tied up in this right now beyond immigration? Because they did the 702 stuff already, right?
Yeah, we can talk about that, too. That should be a whole other topic of discussion.
But that passed.
Yeah, it passed with certain Democrat support. Like, a bipartisan support. Yeah. Way to go, guys. Everybody feel good. Hey, yeah. Everybody hates the rights and privacy of Americans. Yay!
Yeah, I mean, to me, there was no chance of that one not happening. though.
But that's the one that you fight for. Like, that's that could have been one that, like, you would have gotten, not exactly hard leftists, but the hard libertarians, like Justin Amash and, like, the other Republicans who have some measure of conscience to go along with, like, standing up to that.
Yeah, and there's a, there's, the thing is, that doesn't have, and I don't think it's ever had, broad support on the left. It has some support on the left. And,
well, I mean,
and
look
some
at,
on the right.
I mean, it got reauthorized on a bipartisan basis under Obama, so
yeah.
You can't say it doesn't have support on the left. It's just the far left, which apparently I occupy alone on a tiny two-inch plank.
So, I mean, there's a Senator Coons, I believe, was quoted today saying he thinks that the government's going to shut down. Trump said he doesn't think there's going to be a DACA fix, which in a roundabout way tells me the government will shut down unless the Democrats just give up on it, which, God.
I think they would be, I think they would be willing to if there was like, okay, we're going to shut down the government and blame it on you. And the Democrats, who probably should be like, fine, shut down the government, are going to be like, no, 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 don't shut down the government. We'll go along. We'll go along. I'm trying not to make an abused spouse metaphor here.
If they do that, I mean, they might still have some gains in the November election, but that is something that they're going to lose base.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, a lot of times we complain about the parties just appealing to the base, but in this case, that wouldn't be. They would be appealing to a middle ground centrist group,
right, certain
that
segments,
pretty much doesn't exist.
Shall we say a privileged few?
Yeah. Because no one's going to blame them for shutting. Like, no one in the government, like the bureaucrats in the government, the everyday folk, are going to blame the Democrats for this.
Absolutely not. I can't see how it's their fault. The Republicans can't control everything and continue to blame everything on the Democrats. Everything negative that they don't like. Like, if you're willing to blame the Democrats for everything, then fine. The Democrats are responsible for that huge stock market.
Yeah, no shit. With yes. You can't,
you can't take credit and deflect blame, asshole.
Yeah, that's... Well, they're going to try. That's going to be... That's a... I think that's a go-to tactic for the president.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, the economy is so good. It's like, but the president doesn't really have that much to do with the economy, buddy.
And for
sorry.
Fox News, yeah.
I mean, don't listen to... I mean, he listens to Fox... What did he tweet about it, like, 3 times this morning?
I haven't seen any of his tweets this morning, luckily. But yeah, it's routinely... I wonder what percentage of his tweets over the past few weeks or a couple months have had at Fox and Friends in them. It's like everyone I see...
Did you not see that article?
About what? About him?
There was an article I read, I'd have to dig it up again, that broke down the source or what his tweets were about and what he was doing, because they were trying to figure out... No, I think it was an article by the social media editor from Politico, who, of course, spends all of his time trying to analyze Trump's tweets and came to the conclusion like 40% of them are inspired by something on Fox and Friends, and you can tell because either he's talking about it contemporaneously or he literally tags at Fox and Friends.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's not even difficult.
It's like not even hot, yeah.
By the way, a guy whose job it is to analyze the president's social media presence is going to be in a mental hospital someday.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Like,
that should be a that position should be go in and out. Should be a different person every like 4 weeks or something.
Just
to give him R&R.
Like, now we're going to rotate all of our editors through that job. But did you ever see some news with Cody Johnson on Cracked?
Was that like he looks like a news host? And he's
yeah.
Like, yeah, I've seen those.
But you notice how much more haggard he looks after that episode where you watched all of Trump's videos?
Yeah, it'll age you fast. They say the presidency ages you fast, but I think this one is happening more at us.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be getting any worse for wear. And look what Bush's administration did to Jon Stewart. He had color in his hair before then.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no, this one is this one's hurting us all. Yeah, just mental state wise, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot more like anxiety medication prescriptions since he's come into office, and you know, like therapists must be doing really well.
Right, like don't internalize an external problem. I mean, yes, it affects you, but don't stress out about what he is doing or saying that much, as it impedes your normal everyday functioning.
There's more to life. I have to constantly tell myself that.
Restrict your Twitter use to like an hour a day at most.
See, I do it more like short bursts.
Like, yeah, that's
I try. I go like, let's just do a minute. And then I'm like, okay, oop, nope. So too many people quote tweeting the president. Okay, got to get out of here.
Yeah, maybe that should be the rule. When you see four Donald Trump quotes or retweets, you should just stop looking at Twitter.
Yeah.
What's wrong with America is that one guy who tried to bomb that airport in North Carolina.
Wait, I didn't hear it. Was that this past week?
No, that was like last fall.
Oh.
If you remember. The guy who, like, it wasn't even news. Like, some guy literally brought an explosive device into a regional airport in North Carolina, and it wasn't reported until Monday.
Oh.
Yeah. And I'll give you an easy guess as to what color he was. I think it was the same weekend that one guy attacked in Times Square and, like, hurt four people.
I'm gonna go ahead and say white.
Yeah, he was an anti-government white terrorist.
Yeah.
An extremist. I don't even want to use the word terrorist anymore. We'll just call him an extremist.
That's going to be something that's going to come back and bite us, but it already has many times. You know, I love how, by the way, the war on terror didn't really start until after there was Muslim terrorism. Like, there was no war on terror after Oklahoma City?
Nope. like, there were hundreds of armed extreme groups across the country, but no, that's not a problem. We don't need a war on them or any kind of philosophical backlash, even. That was just a few isolated incidents, and it's always the way when you get a white extremist like that who does something stupid like that neo-Nazi from Ohio who killed Heather Heyer and injured 18 other people. He was just a one lone nutbag, but
he was a lone nutbag at a rally of thousands of nutbags,
right? Including one where like that guy like tried to shoot at the crowd, but when his gun jammed and he shot at the ground between them instead. Did you see that video?
Wait, anyway, was that at Charlottesville?
Yeah.
Oh no, I didn't.
You could like see cops in the background, and like this guy pulls out his 9mm, and they can see him try to pull the trigger, but it jammed, and so he like kicks back the slide. I think it was a double feed because you see like at least one round fly out of the chamber, and then he shoots the ground in between him and the protesters instead.
He didn't get in trouble for firing off a round, even though it was at
the get in trouble for firing off a round.
It reminds me of that old Dave Chappelle bit where he's driving in a car with his white friend, and his white friend is driving, and he's like drunk. They're smoking a joint, and he's speeding, and he gets pulled over, and he's just like bald. He's like, I can't believe he's talking to the cop like this. Like, white guys, man, they're not afraid at all of the cops.
No, like white cops are like, you better call me, or like a white guy to a cop be like, you better call me sir.
Yeah,
I'll get your badge number. I'll call your boss.
No, it is. I mean, that's white privilege. Right there. That's white privilege.
Yeah. I mean, I had some guy, like, knock on my door, like, in the middle of the night. What was it, Sunday night? During that huge snowstorm. And was like, I have nowhere to go. Can you please help me? And he's like, I thought about, it's like, do I call the police? And it's like, yeah, he's white. We can call the police. But if it's a black guy, they might walk up with their hands on their weapons.
Yeah. Yeah.
In some lighter news, Yemen is asking that the Saudi Arabian Central Bank kick over a $2 billion cash infusion that was promised in November, as their currency is rapidly depreciating against all of its major trading partners, which is, of course, driving the cost of food in an already starving country even higher.
So this would be the Saudi-backed government?
Mm-hmm. Hadi was trying to get money.
Okay. Are the Saudis going to do that?
I doubt it. They seem to need the money right now. I mean, they're literally churning up their cousins and shaking them.
Huh. You don't think that's just going to yachts, at the moment, at least?
I mean, that guy did buy a $500 million Da Vinci painting, but I don't think... But they also are trying to do this 2030 program, mm-hmm. which involves, like, you know, rapid modernization of their country.
Mm-hmm. You know, if they're not going to help prop up their backed government, though, in that country, I mean, what the hell are they doing?
They want still... misery. That's the only... That's the one conclusion that I can come from, because everybody has been asking the Saudi coalition, like, even... I'm pretty sure the Chinese government, who normally... I mean, they say the right things about humanitarian aid, but I don't think they would ever back it politically.
Yeah.
Or even like, hey man, you gotta stop this. This is a bridge too far.
I mean, how does that benefit them to have that on their...
That's the other part. It's like, you got misery on your southern... I mean, I guess it creates a security vacuum, right? Where you have to project power into it, and so you have to have that power and devote money into the military. MBS was Minister of Defense, or he is Minister of Defense over there, so... And it helps the UAE because it makes a big or a very small country compared to Saudi Arabia, like, get to use a big country's power.
All right. Well, any other...
Hawaii? Are we going to talk about that, or are we just going to leave that?
Oh, I don't really have anything novel to say on the subject. I mean, beyond empathizing with their fear and... I mean, it must have been terrifying.
Right? Terrifying.
You know, a lot of people sort of rightly defended... it's the most factual, unenthusiastic defense I've seen of the president, where they're like, well, Trump didn't do this. Like, but...
He didn't, like...
Which is true.
He didn't stop to, like, hey... Or, you know, stop golfing long enough to tweet it... Hawaii, like, hey, everybody, nobody's going to die.
Yeah.
Excuse me. There is no ballistic missile. And then, you know, chip his fucking shot in. Whatever he was doing.
But there is a little bit of blame, which is if this would have happened, you know, whatever, 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it would have been, the fear would have been as wide. I'm sure there's people still would have been like, what? See this on their phone? But there would have been, you know, as surprised, and it's like, well, who would be shooting at us? But the stakes with North Korea are so high and public because of his tweeting. Even if the stakes actually aren't more likely to lead to a bomb being shot off than they were 2 years ago, although I think their technology is advanced, so... But even if that it wasn't the case, he's been so public with his war of words, and that's been so widely reported, and people know this, and people are rightfully afraid of it, that they believed this. When they saw this, they believed it, and that's because they know that our president taunts a nuclear power.
Right. The system and people in the system, who I guess make up the system, like that one guy who they're refusing to name, who issued the alert... are obviously internalizing the fear that you were just describing. And it's getting worse because they had the same thing happen in Japan today.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, a false alert because people are on a hair trigger. And then there was the article in the Times that was depicting like lower-level preparations for war, where it's not like the commanders... Well, I guess one commander was like, if you're doing anything right now, you should be getting ready for a major global war, potentially.
So, let's go back to this quick. They had a false alarm go out in Japan saying a ballistic missile was heading their way?
Yeah.
I don't want to get conspiratorial, but isn't that really suspicious? Thing just happened? Does that happen regularly anywhere else?
No, of course not.
So you're saying that the fear of the bureaucrats themselves who...
the bureaucrats who are fearful, who have internalized that fear, are just reacting to, well, without reason, obviously.
It's a rational explanation, I guess, but...
Okay, on the on the conspiracy side, could be a North Korean agent. Okay, the two interested parties, you got the North Koreans who have demonstrated a capability with cyber warfare, mm-hmm. who could, I guess, be trying to provoke false alarms and create the kind of panic that we saw in Hawaii and Japan. Or it's somebody on, I guess, for lack of a better term, our side, who is using this as a way of prepping people, or, you know, even gauging people's preparation and potential reaction to what might actually be happening soon. Hmm. I'd prefer to go with the rational explanation, where it was just some guy who made a mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
But it can't help but consider the other possibilities.
It could even... I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole of the conspiratorial theory, but... it wouldn't even have to be North Korea. It could be any nation that wants to destabilize Russia, mm-hmm. Russia or whomever.
Russia, China. Well, I won't say China. They don't usually do offensive cyber warfare. But
well, and this might
maybe
be
even some of those Muslim extremists.
Yes. Oh, definitely. This might be one issue where China wouldn't want to. Like, yeah, we might want to destabilize some of the West. Maybe, but not over the North Korea issue, because that's already touchy for them.
No. The problem with I have that, like, China wants to do anything in the West is, like, they don't want to destabilize their relationship. Everybody is making a lot of money, and they would lose so many markets if they, like, stuck a stronger middle finger in Europe or America's direction.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. It's not in their interest. I don't think they... What would they gain?
Exactly.
Not in this time.
Yeah, there's no clear gain. I mean, maybe a long-term gain, but even that's kind of conditional.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them maybe doing something like that at some point in the future, maybe. But right now, no. That's I don't get anything out of that. Well,
another issue that we could talk about is the United States is standing up a 30,000-strong force to control the border in northeastern Syria. That's going to be Kurds and Arabs, basically east of the Euphrates.
Oh, I thought, yeah, that's the piss-off Turkey plan.
Yeah, it's incredibly dangerous, but my point is that we might be falling backwards into recognizing and establishing Kurdistan.
Well, that's what the Kurds are going to expect.
I mean,
but
they
they've already
should
played
expect
this game
something
with this. I think they expected that after W's war in Iraq.
Well, and they had that vote, which I guess the Israelis indicated that they were in favor of it because the Kurds and Israelis have been allies since back in the day when Saddam was gassing them. But yeah, I mean, this might be a way of like imposing a Kurdistan on the region without basically implicitly.
What's the at least public goal of this?
Establishing border security, because they are still fighting with some ISIS pockets in the area.
Well, I thought we defeated ISIS. I thought that's over with.
No, there are still pockets of ISIS in the Euphrates River Valley that we're contending with.
So they're establishing border security between Iraq and Syria?
Yeah. And, well, I guess the Kurd-dominated regions of Syria.
Is that to prevent ISIS from going just kind of between the two?
Sure, and it also is kind of keeping the Saudi, or Syrian, sorry, I didn't mean Saudi, but the Syrian government out of the area.
Oh, you prevent, giving them, taking away a reason for them to come to the area.
Or giving them one, it's hard to tell anymore.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Germany?
Wait, what about Germany?
They are currently in the middle of coalition talks.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a good one. Let's just end on that right here. Okay. So that's the Christian Democrats under Merkel are won their last election, but they have to form a coalition government because they're parliamentary style, and they traditionally have had the Democratic Socialists or Social Democrats.
Different phrase.
Yeah, on their sides. And
in the past 4 years, but they're notionally a liberal party as opposed to the conservative Christian Democratic Union.
Yes, but they've been able to form a coalition government, but that's kind of eaten away at the votes that the Social Democrats are getting in these elections. And so I don't know if they have they formally announced they're not going to be a part of it.
Right now, as it stands, they're going to have a conference this weekend. The head of the party has been going around trying to drum up support for it, while the head of the youth wing has been going around on a different tour called the No Grow Crow, or No Grow Co tour, to keep from having a Glossa coalition, or a coalition.
Okay.
So yeah. They're going to have a weekend internally over this next weekend and see if they'll continue to in coalition talks.
It's an interesting debate that we don't have a direct version of that here, where it's for the future of the party, the best idea might be to not be a part of the coalition.
Right, because they didn't really get anything out of the previous Grand Coalition, but there was the stability that all Germans seemed to crave.
And as an opposition party, though, they might be able to build their base back up.
Mm-hmm.
But for the future of the country, at least for the stability of the country, it might be better for them to be a part of the coalition. Because the way I understand it is if they're not a part of the coalition, then they have to find, the Christian Democrats have to find another
coalition partner.
Which is likely to be a farther right one, right?
Right, because the Greens, of course, aren't willing to negotiate anymore. Because I think they were also part of the Grand Coalition and are even further into the opposition by virtue of their liberal politics. And Angela Merkel's basically, her continued austerity, which kind of flies in the face of liberal principles.
Mm-hmm.
And inflicting that austerity in across the periphery of the European Union is probably going to be less politically popular in Germany than it even was 4 years ago.
Hmm.
But yeah, so on the other hand, Angela Merkel has absorbed almost all of the conservative votes, for lack of a better term, in Germany, except for the far-right Alternative für Deutschland, AfD, which is the
nationalists.
The fascist-friendly party.
and the interesting thing is that Merkel does not seem to like that aspect of European politics, that white nationalist, that neo-fascist.
Well, it's uncomfortable for her because she's also from East Germany, like these new fascists.
Yeah. And she seems to be kind of a last stand against that, but if she was forced to form a coalition government, to me it almost seems like it would poison her more moderate conservatives, like we see in this country.
Mm-hmm. You can't build a coalition off of beating or opposing 15% of the population.
Mm.
I mean, you can, but it's not sustainable. It may be a temporary condition, but you can't naturally rectify the liberal and conservative priorities in the long term. You can tactically to oppose like an even worse terrible idea like the AfD, but mm-hmm. once the AfD is no longer relevant, then you're just left holding a bag and coalition agreement wondering what are we getting out of this? Because the Social Democrats didn't really get any significant compromise from the Christian Democrats even during the Grand Coalition. And they're not really getting anything out of the coalition talks, as they've been expressed so far.
Hmm. Yeah, I was reading up on this a little bit a week or so ago, and it was interesting historically that the Social Democrats have been arguably the predominant political voice in Europe since mm-hmm. World War II.
Yes.
And they're all dwindling away pretty much across the board.
Right, because people want either a stronger left opinion or a stronger liberal policy, or they're going conservative.
Yeah, and some of it's was portrayed as kind of victims of their own success, where they've built these countries, France, Germany, others, into what they are today, these strong these governments that take care of their people, much different than here.
Right, strong social welfare nets and such.
But a lot of that's now taken for granted. And it's almost like, and as you say, it's either then, people seemingly don't need them anymore or think they don't need them. So they're going then either more left or more right away from that.
Yeah, either we want more stronger protections or we want, more conservative policies. I'm not sure what that is. I'm not even sure what a German conservative policy is, other than it's probably like the centrist Democrat plank here.
Yeah. and I don't know. I mean, I couldn't help but reflect on our own country as I was reading about this, thinking how there's a, how many years later finally a movement afoot in this country to have a social democrat, nearly get the Democratic nomination 2 years ago. And
well, a democratic socialist. Bernie was way left of the social democrats.
Oh my god, it's so confusing. The different nonetheless, he represented something that we haven't seen in this country in decades. Mm-hmm. A political stance, and at least prominently in a presidential election. And it's,
certainly not since Mondale, at least.
I was going to say McGovern. But
Ray McGovern? Huh. Interesting.
I don't know much about Mondale's views, though, so I mean, you might be right on that. Certainly none of the prominent, Clinton wasn't, Obama wasn't. Even Carter really wasn't. So none of the people that won. Yeah, Carter might have had some.
Carter
of the,
was. He was the first president to put solar panels on the roof. He was the one who brought peace to the Middle East. I mean, it's tough to say that he. I mean, he may look. He's actually looking more liberal as time goes by. So.
Yeah, but I don't know. I've been listening to some stuff recently, and he was starting some. Conservative financial things under his presidency that led to some of what was happening under Reagan. I mean, Reagan took it to a much, much bigger level, and the Republicans have taken it to an even bigger level since then. But he was starting some of that. What do you call that? That new Democrat.
The flight loosening up of financial regulations.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that, as you rightly point out, that kind of led to the SNL scandal during the Reagan administration.
That's,
in some ways.
That's what I was listening. Yeah. The loosening of those regulations under the SNL began under Carter, and they were amplified though under Reagan. And so. I don't know. Anyway, my point, ultimately, just to come back to Germany, is I don't know if the left's dying there. I don't know if it's... I don't know what that means for the future of Western Europe. I mean...
Well, I mean, the problem with Europe right now is that they're trying to have a... I won't say utopian, but a beneficent social welfare network, but they're not... necessarily coming to terms with the immigration and integration issues that they're creating by virtue of their policy of Fortress Europe.
What kind of...
Like, they're trying to keep their problems beyond their borders, but they're not stopping the creation of the problems that are bringing the people to their borders.
Oh, through their foreign policy.
Right. I mean, the reason...
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they want to keep the foreigners out, but they're not... going to stop selling weapons to, for instance, the CIA and well, I guess formerly DOD armed rebels in Syria, or the various militant factions in Libya, or any national government.
Or just in general be a vocal supporter of those types of foreign policy. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, like in Eritrea, like a lot of the people who are trying to flee to Europe are from Eritrea. And if you look on a map, Eritrea is a very small country with very little currency or very little foreign exchange. Mm-hmm. Like if the West really cared, they would be able to put a boot down on Asmara, the capital of Eritrea, with very little effort. But they won't. But, well, I guess to frame it, the reason people are leaving Eritrea is that there is a mandatory national service until, I think, 35. Jesus. As soon as you come of age, you are in the military. So it's basically government slavery.
Do they have a strong rebellion there or something like that?
They fought a decades-long World War I-style war with Ethiopia.
Yeah. But that's over with. Isn't it?
But... Well, it's over, but the people who are put into power by that need to continue to be in power, so...
Okay. If former military runs the country, or...
Yeah.
Okay.
The same military dictator that fought that war is still in charge.
35, though.
Mm-hmm. And that's why people are like, well, I'm 23, and going to Europe. I can wash dishes in the back of some European restaurant instead of digging a trench somewhere in northeast Africa.
Huh. Wow.
And you would think that would be a bigger humanitarian issue, you know? I mean, the United States is already trying to, shall we say, cement its ties with Ethiopia.
Yeah. All right, those were some weak thoughts, and we'll be back in a minute.
It's an announcement that experts say came at a wrong time. On Thursday, the United States government announced that it was suspending food and fuel supplies to units of the Somali armed forces over corruption concerns. It's a blow to these soldiers on the battlefield facing Africa's most dreaded militant group.
The soldiers were already poorly paid and poorly equipped and poorly trained. If you stop feeding them, I don't know what kind of support you're expecting from that side. Announcing in this scale and doing in this time, it hurts Somalia, and it's very blow up to the Somali government. And it helps, I think, Al-Shabaab morale.
Washington, however, says that it will continue to offer support to the Somali special forces and work with Mogadishu to restore support to other units. According to the U.S. inspection team who visited 9 military bases across the country, the military was unable to account for its aid. Earlier this month, President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaggio told international partners that his government is committed to fighting corruption.
We want to talk about AFRICOM today, and this has gotten a little bit of news within the past few months because of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson being killed in Niger last year.
And the Green Beret who got murdered in Mali, allegedly by 2 Navy SEALs.
Oh, yeah. At the time of the LaDavid Johnson news coming out, Senator McCain and Graham, I believe, wrote a letter to the administration wanting more information for senators about what we're doing, you know, details of the mission and the goals there. Now, both of those senators would be strong supporters and are strong supporters of the war on terror.
Right. They're certainly not beatnik liberals.
Yeah.
Or doves in any respect.
Yeah, but I think they have a valid point of, at the very least, or at the very, very least, senators should know what's going on. I think...
Because they're both, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't they both on the defense committees?
I don't know for sure. I know I would be shocked if McCain wasn't.
Certainly Lindsey Graham is on the Foreign Policy Committee.
having...
Yeah, he's chairman of the Armed Services Committee.
Okay, yeah.
John McCain is.
And so he's he's like, wait, I'm chairman of the committee. What the hell's going on in Africa? And this past week, The Intercept came out with an article about one of their writers...
Nick Terse,
who has been writing about AFRICOM for a number of years, and his...
complicated relationship with their public affairs officials.
Yeah, he's routinely stonewalled doing reporting on it. And as he points out, you know, the only information journalists seem to get is all of the great work they're doing for children there.
Right, all the great humanitarian work, which I'm sure there's a lot to be done, but a lot of what they are calling humanitarian work doesn't really amount to anything.
And that's clearly not why they're there.
Certainly not.
And so he does a lot of report, or attempts to do a lot of reporting on, you know, kind of account, I think he uses the term from correct, accountability reporting.
Right.
And so, you know, you have senators, you have journalists wanting to know what's going on there. It's, at the moment, not a big issue for the public, it seems. Although that definitely, a spotlight was put on it because of LaDavid Johnson. I think this is only going to get bigger, though, over the next couple of years. And so, you know, I think we want to get in on it first, so
sure.
To speak.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think we want to be a little more informed. We want listeners to be a little more informed. And I actually, so after hearing about the LaDavid Johnson killing, I was like, you know, I want to know what's going on in Africa. Like, I want to know something. Not necessarily sure. About AFRICOM, but I want to know something. So that's when I picked up the book about Nigeria, just because it's the most potent, or, you know, the strongest, largest country in that region. So, you know, I've been reading some about the political situation there over the past couple decades, or lack thereof, often. And I don't know. I mean, it's something that's definitely been on my mind. I'm sure it's on yours.
Yeah, it's kind of close to what I studied in college. I took like at least two classes that I can think of off the top that were directly dedicated to Africa and African affairs.
So, one thing I'm going to ask just a really general question here, and that is, why is the command there such a covering the whole continent? Is there a corollary for somewhere where we are so involved like that?
Well, that's just the structure of the Department of Defense. This is common. There's like, okay, I think if memory serves, 8 or 9 different geographical commands.
Okay.
Like AFRICOM itself was founded in 2007 to coordinate and really put some structure to the American military's involvement in the African continent, which was only in its nascent days then compared to now. Because previously that was under the purview of the European command. And if that doesn't look colonialist, I don't even know what does.
Oh, boy.
But, okay, so here's another interesting fact. Like, I'll give you a guess. As somebody who's reasonably informed, where do you think AFRICOM is headquartered?
Ooh, good question. Okay, so there's two ways to go about this. The cynical way, or if I were doing it, where would I put it? Okay, hint, is it in Africa?
No.
Oh, okay, so we're going the cynical route. Okay, so it's not in Africa.
Well, not exactly. I'll let you keep guessing, and then I'll explain.
Okay, not exactly. Well, if it has its roots in Europe, it might be somewhere in Europe. I don't know. I'll say Paris. I don't know.
Well, Germany. It's in one of our bases in Germany.
Okay, that's close.
Yeah, I think it's actually where Eurocom is headquartered to or nearby. But, okay, so on the cynical view, as you pointed out, it's because, well, we don't want to have a base in Africa. But on the optimistic side, like ever since, even since 2007, they've been working constantly on trying to find any African country that would agree to accept their facility and to be, you know, the headquarters for AFRICOM.
Why wouldn't they want, I mean, kind of beyond just a general sort of anti-American foreign policy, why wouldn't you want the command center? It seems at the very least that might be an economically beneficial thing to have.
No, I mean, sure, there might be some economic benefit, but commands are not necessarily very large, but they are huge political targets, like the embassy in, you know, Tanzania and Kenya.
Okay. So they'd just be worried about violence concerns. And people. Okay.
Like, you don't... See, that's the problem with, like, opposition. If you create something for an extreme opposition to oppose, then they... Well, I guess not only do they have a reason, but they have something to attack.
Yeah.
And so if you don't give them something to attack, then they can't be anything more than just angry people with extreme ideas.
Not that you would necessarily know the travel schedule of generals, but, I mean, I would assume they at least go to Africa, these individuals, you know, the generals and higher...
Yeah, the generals involved, I'm sure,
yeah,
are really engaged. I'm not going to discredit them for that, it just sends, like, at least a interesting perception from it being based in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It goes, on the other hand, it also is a perception of how much AFRICOM is, or how warmly AFRICOM is received by Africa.
Well, clearly. I mean, is there any country there that is, so maybe they don't want the command center there in their borders, but is there a country there that is more allied with our missions than... than others?
Much like the Middle East, we've created a series of, shall we say, I mean, in the Cold War we would call them client states, but I'm not sure that's as directly applicable as it once was, because one of our biggest partners in East Africa, Ethiopia, which has allowed us to set up a whole constellation of NSA listening posts, is also being very warmly and generously supported by the government of the People's Republic of China.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, Ethiopia, even during Obama's administration, like, I really need to stop saying like, but they invaded Somalia to take down the Islamic courts in Mogadishu, which created al-Shabaab.
You're saying the invasion led to the creation of al-Shabaab?
Well, al-Shabaab was the Islamic courts youth wing before the courts got stamped out by a U.S.-sponsored Ethiopian invasion.
Okay. So Somalia would be one of the, is a focus of AFRICOM.
Sure.
It's been obviously destabilized.
Right.
Almost our entire lives.
Yeah, I've been, in 91 was when their government collapsed. Okay. Serves.
And famously in the 90s, Black Hawk Down, the UN mission there, all of that. So... okay, so what are we doing in Somalia right now?
Currently, we're propping up the government there, and according to some reports, like certainly from The Intercept and others, we were engaging in CIA interrogations at the international airport there in Mogadishu. Most recently, highlight something else, which I should probably talk more about... There was a terrible incident last year in which special forces there are allegations that some special forces killed at least 10 civilians on one of these anti-Al-Shabaab raids.
Yeah, and the AFRICOM was kind of hiding facts about it.
Right, and this is creating problems because apparently the Somali National Army is basically being run... almost exclusively by one of the many clans within Somalia, which has caused a bit of breakdown and a cleavage in the government. Because as a response to that, the United States said it was no longer going to provide broad military support to the Saudi National Army, except only to certain special forces units that they're probably still in the field with.
That's such a common theme in American foreign policy. You know, you pick the one that'll work with you, and then that group gets greedy about power and starts excluding or using their alliance with the U.S. to delegitimize other groups, especially these factional societies.
I think in Mogadishu, this cleavage led to them raiding a senator's house. Like, ooh, the army. Yeah, so...
Hmm. Back to that incident. There were eyewitness accounts of this.
Sure. It's coming out that civilians... Like, this family carried the bodies to Mogadishu and put them on public display to shame the government.
And they... if I recall, they... it was supposed to be going after Al-Shabaab.
Right.
But
they were going after Al-Shabaab, and it...
But there was very little reason to believe that's what happened at all.
Right, it seems to be like that interfactional fighting where... This is another subtle theme that I've seen in different incidents across AFRICOM and even the military in general, where we get involved with local partners, and because of, shall we say, asymmetrical information, we end up getting used for those local power, the ends of those local powers. Like the Special Forces raid in Somalia turned into basically the Special Forces attacking the rivals of the clan that's controlling the Saudi, or Somali National Army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this the factional nature when you're an independent larger foreign country becomes hard to navigate without experts, and especially if you got a itchy trigger finger.
Right, and this goes to my larger point of how many troops do we have in Somalia? How many troops do we have in Africa? How many bases? There's only a little public information about this because, 16 point something percent of all special forces operations are happening in Africa, which is a huge increase from, the 1% it was in before 9/11, even.
And that's without any sort of declared war. And that's just and little congressional oversight.
Yeah. And that's how much global special forces are there, which means, there are probably tens, if not hundreds of thousands of American troops in Africa in various
Yeah, and the way I understand it is a huge percentage of the operations in Africa are special forces operations.
Right,
and
it's so these raids that not even Lindsey Graham and John McCain know about.
And they're heavily relying on, which has become a broad issue with the U.S. military, where I think last year was the first year ever where the more deaths occurred of U.S. soldiers who were special forces than general infantry.
Mm-hmm. Conventional forces, yeah.
Yeah, and... You know, that's putting a lot on the table of these people. You know, it kind of, at what point are they not, and I don't mean to discredit their training or anything, but just at what point are they not special forces anymore? That's just your tool.
It's just our forces, yeah.
Yeah, and, these people have, I believe they have longer missions, they have tougher missions, more deadly missions, and when that becomes the norm, that's putting a big strain on them. And I think a lot of this broad problem where more deaths are occurring amongst them is because of Africa, from what I understand. Like, So, okay, so Somalia is... Somalia. And so... Let's shoot on over to West Africa then.
Okay. There you have, for instance, our opposition against Al-Qaeda and Islamic Maghreb, which was the group that took over Mali. And, of course, our response and our drone operations against the sub-factions that were previously Boko Haram in Nigeria.
Boko Haram isn't a thing anymore? I didn't know that.
They kind of split off into two separate factions. One is in Extrem Nord, like the extreme north province of Cameroon, and the other one went north towards Lake Chad.
Oh, okay. How much are these... Okay, so in this book I was reading by a former U.S. ambassador to Nigeria, they talk about Boko Haram and just in general the radical Islamic... And this book's, at this point, a few years out of date. So I'm curious. In it, he talks about the radical Islamic extremism that was, at that point, more in its infancy in northern Nigeria. And how, kind of ideologically, they weren't really tied to Middle East extremism, though you were starting to see a little bit of that. They kind of were their own thing.
Yeah, they had a very different from your Salafist or typical Sunni Islamic terrorist ideology.
Yeah, there was one that was even, they called themselves like Al-Qaeda of Nigeria or something like that, but they really, no one thought that they had anything really to do with Al-Qaeda in the Middle East.
So, that's the Al-Qaeda and Islamic Maghreb group, yeah.
So is that changing? Are they tied in with ISIS or whomever? Or are they still pretty much just their own?
I'd say they're local groups. Like Boko Haram means no Westerners. It was an incredibly xenophobic, extremist, puritanical type of Islam trying to cope with what they saw as undue Western influence on their society, which found expression because northern Nigeria was being, shall we say, neglected in favor of other parts of it because they had a Christian president instead of a Islamic one like they do now.
Yeah. Actually, the book kind of gets into that back-and-forth nature of Nigerian politics, where no one really wants to, I shouldn't say no one, but of the powerful, they don't really want to break apart the country because they all sort of profit from each other. But at any one time, one group thinks it's not profiting enough because the president is whatever religion that's opposite of theirs. And it just, it keeps going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Lots of intercommunal violence.
Oh man, the violence there. It's... I'm reading this book, too, about the fall of the Roman Republic, and it talks about the isolated incidents of political violence where they get a big mob together and then they go kill some dude so that he's not running for office or something. And this book I'm reading about, what was before that, reading about Nigeria, that's like a common everyday thing. That's just how it works there.
Yeah, that's their democracy.
Yeah. Jeez. The Islamic extremism's going on in
That's different. But as I was saying, Boko Haram is different from AQIM, Al Qaeda and Islamic Maghreb, because that group was created, basically armed from our overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya. All of a sudden, all of his inventories were opened up like a giant fucking arms bazaar, and that country grabbed a bunch of its weapons and took over a different country.
That is terrible. Okay.
Right. Okay. But to get your point of, or your question of, for instance, Boko Haram, how they identify on the, I guess, Al Qaeda ISIS spectrum, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of the cleavage in between the two groups, whereby one of them, I think, the northern one that went to Lake Chad, who's, I can't remember their leaders' names off the top of my head, but he identifies more with that as typical Salafist kind of attitude, but the other group became more extreme along the lines of ISIS. So it's not that they're identifying with ISIS, it's just that they're reflecting it.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Okay. And so we are using... So are we working with local armies there? AFRICOM?
Yes.
Okay.
For instance, in Cameroon, we work with their special forces, who have a certain acronym. I'm not going to look up at the moment to interdict the Boko Haram group that's there in Cameroon and eastern Nigeria, kind of operating in that heavily forested area where they can move around with basic impunity. But this has also led to that same, I think their acronym is DESA, group being accused of torture. Much like we did in the War on Terror, it appears that we're outsourcing our torture of Boko Haram suspects to the locals so the Americans won't have to get their hands dirty. Mm. And this was actually the subject of an extensive forensic architectural imaging of the airbase that we, I guess we didn't create. It was already there. But the Americans basically built a whole new section on it to conduct drone operations out of one half of it. But still, on the other half, there are Cameroonian special forces conducting enhanced interrogation. Mm. And they've tried to prove they couldn't, we haven't found any conclusive or definitive evidence of American involvement in any of these atrocities. But if those Americans couldn't hear it, it would be incredibly surprising. Mm-hmm. From where they were known to operate. And there are plenty of pictures on social media of Americans enjoying the nicer things in life at that airbase with their Cameroonian counterparts. But this is continuing because now we have, in Mali, we had one drone base already at Niamey, and we're building a second secret drone base in the country in addition to the ones that we have probably in Ethiopia and other places.
So, in theory, our goal there is to stop terrorism stop terrorism so that it's not exported to our shores? Or is it to more directly just protect?
Interfere with the affairs of local countries?
Well, it doesn't seem like. I wouldn't think there would be that much American invested, because in the Middle East, there's a lot of money at stake.
Sure.
Oil, and I know there is oil there as well, but it's not nearly, right, the infrastructure investment in U.S. businesses tied to it as there is in Africa, is there? Or am I just wrong about that? What are we doing?
At some point you have to... it becomes finding a place to spend all of this ridiculous military spending. The Democrats increased it by 80 million more than the Trump administration wanted. So, with special forces being so popular and so big, it's very easy to spend a lot of money on them. And it becomes a point of, trying to find missions for the force.
Huh, yeah, okay. It starts
feeding
itself. But,
on the other hand, I'm not trying to say that we're not doing good there or that there aren't things that we could be doing with our military assets in Africa, but this is perhaps not the way that we should be doing it.
Yeah.
Under what the guise of special forces to the point where, I as a reasonable educated observer couldn't begin to guess at the number of bases we have in Africa, nonetheless the number of troops and other, our general disposition in the various countries.
Yeah. No, and that's a there's little to no accountability for this, and that isn't fair to the American public.
And
or the African public.
Certainly the Africans, how many stories aren't being told of families that are getting torn apart or suffering deaths because of, shall we say, bad special forces raids.
Well, they hear the stories.
Sure.
But,
they don't speak English.
No, yeah, but what I'm saying is that if our mission there is to, whether it's to either project American power, eventually business and interests, or it's to prevent more terrorism and rebellion, then either way they're going against their own interests by on one hand allowing there to be massacres of civilians, even if it's an honest mistake. I mean, it's a tragic, honest mistake, but even if it was, but by that happening, by the torture, by the, you know, that's not going to make the populist happy, especially if then there's no change, there's no accountability to either their people or even then to our own people. Because I don't think the American public would... I mean, you know, the Iraq War became very unpopular. You know, it's still happening. It, you know, there's still troops there. But it definitely changed after Abu Ghraib and a lot of news came out about it. I mean, the American public doesn't like the atrocities. And
yeah, I certainly agree with that. Like, no American wants these things done in our name.
And, I mean, that's... Presumably, that's why they're not letting journalists ask the hard questions. They're hanging up on them. I mean, you should read that article by Nick Turse was it's almost comical. Like they were he called like dozens of times from his number, and then just to test it, he called from another number. He got the guy to pick up. He introduced himself as who he was, and then the guy just hung up. Yeah, it was almost like a Monty Python sketch or something. The lengths to which they were going not to talk to him. So just quick, is there anything going on in Southern Africa?
Perhaps murky involvement in Zimbabwe.
Okay.
I know we're training regional, probably, players. Like, I know, like, Botswana, for instance, is an incredibly stable country, and the only reason we would have her special forces there, as we have acknowledged, is for training missions to help, you know, the locals get better at being military, for lack of a better euphemism.
So we're over there training armies, just in general in Africa, we're over there training armies, putting in air bases, and what, the Chinese are building dams and railroads?
I guess in a most general way, yes. Like, they only have one base in Africa, at Djibouti.
Is that a relatively recent?
I think they built... They started that 2 years ago, if memory serves, but it is a relatively recent.
Yeah. Hmm. All right, anything else you want to say on AFRICOM here?
It's way too shrouded in mystery, and it's part of the more overarching and problematic... problem we have with classification, over-classification.
Yeah, that's a good way. It's a good way. Over-classification, I like that.
I mean, sure, we don't necessarily need to know what they're doing, but giving the American people an aggregate dollar number for our involvement in Africa in any given year doesn't seem like it would compromise operational security in any significant way. Especially not since they're special forces, and that probably wouldn't even be able to get...
No, I see what you're saying. At least have... I mean, how often in our history have we had extended quantitatively big military missions where... You never hear the president talk about it. And that goes back to Obama, too. I don't remember him giving us any big speeches about some sort of mission in Africa.
Nope. I mean, I think he did when they were going against Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army, but I don't think he had any grand doctrine behind the opposition to Boko Haram.
I mean, the only comparable thing I can think to this, although I don't think they were as large, involved as many soldiers or as many bases, as much money, would be kind of early Cold War secret paramilitary CIA operations.
I guess our involvement in Central America might come close.
Yeah, so that might be something a little comparable. Involving multiple countries, and that didn't end up well, huh?
Yeah, this doesn't seem to have ended up well for anybody involved. Certainly that's not the people of Honduras and El Salvador.
That was not the comparison I was that they should be shooting for.
But they aren't. They're not building a better example, so what are we supposed to compare it to?
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll come back to AFRICOM soon enough. Hey, knowing our history, in 5 minutes we're going to get a news alert that something huge just happened in Somalia.
Yeah, let me check my Google News.
Yeah, before we end this segment, let's make sure there's nothing recently reported. All these bitches is big fans. In my corner is big man. Try to run up on me, then saw the Glock and that bitch ran. Hell of times when I'm making rounds, I make these niggas look stupid. A lot of motherfuckers full of shit, so you know they walk around pimping. I've been dropping friends like left and right, to be honest, none of it hurt me. Cause I'm mad mouth water when he see me, I'm assuming that nigga thirsty. I'm spitting 16, but no, it ain't sweet. Mess up the beat with a flow so neat. No, we can't kiss, you can't even kiss me. What's fun, cross square pants, up your teeth, that yellow, yellow, yellow shit. Niggas bugger, get a grip. Can't take me nowhere but wanna feel, man, you a motherfucking trip. Ring around a rosy, pockets look like guacamole. Pussy good just like Chipotle, you look like a holy moly. We're gonna do our hip-hop test drive, which involves a car, music with the bass turned way up, probably at least a couple blunts, and listen to something new, something we haven't heard before. This week we have a Chicago-based rapper. Her name is Cupcake with two K's for some reason. I haven't figured that out. And her new album is her third studio album. It's called Epherize. Epherize. Is that a word? I don't know.
I don't. Not that I've been able okay. to find.
I didn't look it up. It's called Epherize. She has a couple mixtapes called Cumcake and STD.
Although F for eyes is kind of an interesting play on words.
F her eye. Oh.
No, F for eyes, yeah. The fuck for the eyes. Interesting. Yeah, but anyway.
She is 20 years old. She's from Chicago, so Midwest represent. She is catchy, she's quick-witted, she's funny as hell, she's very sexual and dirty.
Very technically proficient.
Yes. She has great rhythm. On this album, the production value is very good.
Yeah, really good.
Most of the songs are danceable, party songs. Yeah, so what do you think about this?
I liked it. I mean, on the, I guess the basic continuum that I try to use for rap, it's like, the first judgment is, 0 to 1. Is it true, or is it a performance? Like, I mean, all rappers are actors, but a lot of it is, some of it is truer than others. I would say she definitely, I mean, there's no suicide track, but she, it definitely feels pretty true to life.
Yeah, she's opening her soul at times, definitely. I mean, there's one song called Self Interview.
Yeah, that was a really good song.
Yeah. I was just re-listening to some of it this morning. The first song talks about, like, stretch marks on her thighs and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, she talks about, yeah, my stretch marks itch.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was a good line. It stood out.
What's your second? So you look at, is it true,
true to life.
Or is it kind of fraudulent? And I'd agree. Right. This is honest.
Right. And then there's the ODB reference scale from the Legend of Liquid Sword, Knock Knock. That song where ODB, the chorus is ODB going knock knock. Who's that banging on my door? Abstract, commercial, or hardcore?
Okay.
And this one, it's been tough for me to exactly pin down where she rates on those particular scales. I mean, it's not really abstract. Some of it's pretty clever wordplay, but it's not exactly what I would call abstract.
No.
Some of it's pretty hardcore, but she doesn't exactly talk about hardcore themes like gunplay or the trap or whatever else you might have.
She talks about, like, she talks about shooting people or... She does. She talks about that some. She, like Cinnamintos Crunch, Cinnamintos Crunch.
Right,
I got bitches want to box me for my Cinnamintos Crunch.
That gunshot looks like a navel. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. The whole song.
So she does raid on the hardcore scale.
Yep. And if you count sex as hardcore, which that could kind of be hardcore or commercial, but the fact that she gets pretty raunchy, I would put it that also a little bit in the hardcore.
Yeah. But she also has more of a commercial aspect than some of the other rappers that we've seen on this segment.
Yeah, so for the commercial, I'd say the production value itself is, I hesitate to use the word poppy in that it doesn't necessarily sound like if you go turn on the hip-hop station and whatever the top selling rap tracks are, does it sound just like those? No, I wouldn't say that. But it's not, the production itself isn't like abstract or weird. You know, it's
really well polished.
It's banging. It's polished is a good word. Yeah. And I'd say that is commercial. And then it's debatable whether the hypersexualized female thing is a commercial thing or not. I mean, we've seen it like with Nicki Minaj get pretty popular. But I don't think it's necessarily inherently a commercial thing. But I think it's debatable.
Yeah, well, it's more reads more into that true to life scale. Like this, this is her depicting herself, or something. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, or representation. You know, it's I'm sure. I think I saw a quote from her to begin 2017. She said she was gonna suck 2017 dicks that year, and she had fans like asking her how the progress was going. So, yeah, I mean, she's prone to exaggeration, I'm sure, and, you know, playing a character, but I think there's a truth in it. It's like a good joke, you know, there's some truth in it.
Right.
And at least in this album, she gets into, you know, there's one song, at least one song, and maybe some lines here or there about kind of yearning for a relationship, and having her heart broken like, and stuff like that, you know, it's...
The one line was like, why do I fuck them as soon as I think they're cute or
something along those lines. Yeah, no, that was it, I think. Yeah, I think that was in Self-Interview. Why do I fuck them as soon as they're cute or something like that. So I have to say, this is probably my favorite album we've reviewed. I pretty much love every single song. It's... not normally what I would listen to, I don't think, but there's something about her style, even beyond the content, there's something about her style, that her voice and her cadence, that I love and I just want to keep hearing. It reminds me of, like you're watching a movie and there's just a character that you don't even know why, but you just, every scene with that character, you're more engaged in. And just this album reminded me of that. Like, I just really enjoyed every single verse, every single chorus. I'm glad there were no guest rappers. It would have taken away from it for me.
Absolutely.
I don't think anyone... I'm not saying she can never... I don't know if she has in the past. I'm not saying she can never have a guest rapper. But in this...
This song... this album was more cohesive for the lack of it.
Yes, it just kept going... there wasn't a break. I love it. If this was, you know, back in like college or something, I would have been playing this at parties so much.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
In terms of style for the production value, I liked the, there was kind of a tropical vibe throughout it, which she raps to really well, which I don't think is as easy as it might seem on the surface.
No, that 3/4 beat is hard to keep.
It's not a normal rhythm that hip hop uses. Although those different sounds are kind of being blended in pop today. But nonetheless, I think she did an excellent job with that. She can rap fast, which helps. And she can rap fast with good rhythm.
She was trying to. She's obviously salaried because she's trying to put as many words into the minute as possible.
Yeah. I liked the humor is, it's probably the funniest
album that we've
covered. Yeah, yet. I mean
there's very little funny about Eminem's revival.
Yeah, and even his attempts at humor, you know, I mean, it's good, but it's not, it's not as funny as this. She has, like, good lines. I think I saw a review of her, of this album, compare her to Ghostface.
That's a good comparison.
Interesting that you've already brought up Wu-Tang. Just in terms of her just clever one-liners, one after another. Her references are maybe not totally novel, but, you know, she does a song that's like a bunch of children's characters.
Right, cartoons, the second track of the album.
Yep, and she has one song called Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Awesome.
She's not afraid to... and she's not afraid to be... a little personal at times. It'll be interesting to see if that develops over time through her career. But
right, speaking of not being afraid, I have to say this album gets, even though it's not necessarily my favorite that we reviewed, would certainly get a huge gold star for featuring one of the few tracks that I've ever heard in hip hop feature, like, based, not exact, well, I mean, yeah, about the homosexual lifestyle. Number 5, Crayons, on the album.
Is that the one
besides
that's
being
like,
a great song, was like, what was it?
Is that like the one the chorus is like boy on boy, girl on girl?
Girl on girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Absolutely wonderful for so many different reasons.
Yep. No, especially, yeah, and as you point out, especially within hip-hop, you know, we were raised in the 90s, you know, where
like
rappers, they didn't do that.
Yeah, being gay or homosexual is a slur by its very nature.
I think even female rappers back in the day were making,
yeah,
making
they would,
those same
Yeah, they would say, call people faggots in the same similar way.
Yes, and no, I totally agree with you. There's a progressive vibe to her, even though she talks about gangbanging and straight sex a lot.
I mean, if she's from Chicago, you have to have some of... You're at least next to the violence, so it'd be tough not to talk about.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I would be shocked if she was not accustomed to it in her surroundings. I agree with you. It's actually a really noteworthy point. You don't see it enough. I think it's more of a trend today with millennial rappers particularly, I'm sure. But it's... I don't hear it much.
I mean, I guess
it's... And she devoted a whole chorus to it.
Right? Well, a whole song.
Yeah.
About how it's okay and do whatever you want. That's just amazing. Like, not talking about it is not the same as supporting it or being okay with it.
Yeah, and it's... Because it's... So, it's one thing to kind of claim to be sexually liberated. You're going to talk about your sex life or what you like sexually or just be kind of dirty on a track. But
and that's just okay. That's you being okay with you.
Yeah. And that's fine. But then to extend that, yes, to others.
Mm-hmm.
And not just to other straight people.
Like others that you wouldn't like nothing to do with your experience, but that doesn't mean you have to oppose it or denigrate it outright.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No, she did good. She did good in that aspect, as far as I'm concerned. So what were the... It's hard for me to honestly pick out tracks that stood out for me. I've had Cinnamon Toast Crunch in my head a lot.
I can see that. It's a really good song for that.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Like, at first, when I listened to it, I was like, that's a kind of a weird hook. And then she just drilled it into my head.
Yep. Let me bring up the track list here, see if there's the ones that stuck out. The first track is a good little intro track, for sure.
2 minutes, yeah.
Duck, Duck...
And then Duck, Duck, Goose.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun, dirty one.
I Chew With My Wisdom Teeth, 4, Wisdom Teeth.
Yeah, post-pick was fun. Single Well Taken was one of the, little bit more... personal songs, the premise being kind of an inattentive partner. She feels single while she's taken.
Self-Interview obviously was great.
Yeah, I think Self-Interview and Cinnamon Toast Crunch are probably my two favorites. I thought
I'd say Crayons was.
Oh, okay.
My personal
favorite. I think
favorite.
The first half of the album in general is a little stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But the second half, if that was the best, would still be pretty good.
Yeah, that's why I guess I posted that only to you, but my analogy to her was like hot lava. It's very hot, but it doesn't seem to be moving very quickly. Because a lot of, like, okay, and now this reverts back to my third measure, the technical aspects of mm-hmm. her particular raps, and she uses basically two different styles. I don't mind them. I think they're great for her content and great for the production, but on a purely technical basis, she's okay, but not innovative. Like, not even too against herself.
When you say... Can you elaborate on that? You mean like...
Okay, so for instance, Crayons and Cartoons in 2 minutes, she uses that really fast style that we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, you know, she's trying to cram as many words into the minute as she can.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, what was it, in Post Pick, maybe Meet and Greet, she goes to that 3-4 cadence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, okay. But she only uses those two cadences throughout most of the album.
Yeah.
I mean, technically she's great, but that's the only... that I was digging for stuff to criticize here.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, yeah. Yeah, we don't want to... It's like a teacher with, like, a good student. Like, I can't give him 100% every time.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's like how I used to talk about early Green Day. I liked them, but they always sounded the same. Which was fine because I liked it, but if you didn't really like that, then you aren't getting anything out of it because it's all going to be the same. It's not like you're going to like one song and not like others.
Right. You're not expanding your style potentially to new audiences.
If you turn on one of her songs and you like it, there's a good chance you're going to like the whole album. Yeah, and we'll see if she... I mean, she's only 20 years old.
Yeah, she's just on the top of a SpaceX rocket at this point. You know, hopefully it goes better than that military satellite.
She began her career by leasing material through the internet, in per Wikipedia, in late 2012.
Yeah, she's
15.
She's grassroots like nothing else. Like, literally grew from a sprout.
Yeah, and these are not major... These still aren't major label. I think even this one was a self-release.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems to be prolific. If, by the way, she has 2 mixtapes and 3 studio albums in 5 years. You know, she's working hard. Wow, she's gone on 2 tours. It looks like last year. I think she's gonna. The only thing is that if she doesn't blow up with this, it's almost like, when will she? I don't know. But I don't know how she could... I mean...
How do you not? This whole album is just solid gold.
The only... I don't know.
I mean, I guess you might... If she doesn't explode by this, you have to start thinking, like, maybe they are racist and sexist. And against the progressive lifestyle.
Well, or, yeah, body image. Like, they're not going to put her on the cover of Maxim, so... You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think that's where the sexism comes in, particularly with female hip hop stars. You know, you could have ugly ass men being hip hop stars. I mean, for God's sakes, some of them are hideous, but you know, that's okay. They can wear baggy.
Have to be a beautiful woman to be a successful hip hop artist commercially.
Yeah, Nicki Minaj, Lil Kim. I mean, they're not maybe like Halle Berry, but they're fine looking ladies. And I don't know, Cupcake's pretty cute too. But she also like. Like, we were looking at, me and my partner were looking at some pictures. I'm like, who is this person? So, we're looking at some pictures. It's almost like in some pictures, she, I don't know how to put it. Like, but it's like
she eschews makeup.
Excuse me. Yeah, like, the album cover for this album is her highly made up.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, it's like a blue, purple, just everywhere. Her hair, her face.
Her lips.
But I'm looking at other pictures, and it's like she's... It just feel real. Like, it's just like someone you'd see at, like, CVS or Walgreens or, you know, or just on the street.
Like, you might pass her on Clark Street in Chicago.
Yeah, and I just... don't see media latching onto that, unfortunately, because of their innate sexism. We can have some, yeah, as I said, like some ugly ass, looks like he rolled out of bed man be a rock star or a hip hop star, but you know, the women can't be like that. And you know, more power to her. Like I hope she can break through that ceiling and be herself. Yeah, be whoever she wants to be, because she has the talent. I mean, she's better here than, not to just compare her to female rappers, but I think she's better here than Nicki Minaj or Lil' Kim ever was.
Oh, certainly. I think. That's kind of a low bar.
I mean, Nicki Minaj has had her moments, but, and then... I mean,
she's at least as good as anything like Jean Grey, for instance.
But let's compare her to... Like, you're telling me she wouldn't crush most male rappers?
Oh, I'd love to see her battle a rap.
Yeah. I'm just trying to picture her, like, put her on a Kanye song and tell me... I mean, she's from Chicago. Where's Kanye putting her on songs?
Right.
I think he's afraid.
I'm surprised he hasn't picked her up, like, just out of the draft league.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I totally agree. Like, I think with the right people behind her, she'd hit it big, but maybe there is like an element of her that's not, doesn't want to conform, doesn't want to be told what to do. I don't know. I don't know much about her, but I think we'll be listening to her for a while.
Sure.
Yeah. Right on. All right. So we give it, two thumbs up, two blunts up. I don't know. Two blunts lit up. I don't know
our ratings. Scores high on almost all of my comparisons.
Yeah. I'd actually go so far as to say it's probably some of the most excited I got listening to a new rap album. Or like a newer rap artist since Odd Future for me. Sci-Hi was really cool. Sci-Hi the Prince from a few weeks ago. But this got me, I don't know, it just got me more, like, into it than some other newer hip-hop that I've heard recently. So
I still think that Sci-Hi the Prince song edges this one out, but that's a whole other debate.
Yeah. We'll have to have, like, pick...
Here in review.
Yeah, like, pick some highlights and then, see which, like, individual tracks we'd take. We could make a mix, of songs we've reviewed. The hip hop test drive playlist.
Absolutely, pick all the highlights. That'd be easy.
All right, we'll be back with closing thoughts in a moment. Right. Well, we have a fun week ahead. We touched on in Week Thoughts the, how does the media always put it, looming government shutdown. It's always looming. It's a word they love
looming.
To use.
The end is always looming.
We probably don't need to rehash that too much. And the DACA debate is going to be is going to be on fire this week.
In typical tell me what to think fashion, the administration has just announced it's going to withhold, what was the number, $65 million from the UN Refugee Agency? Yeah, $65 million from Palestinian refugee programs. Saying U.S. agent or UN agency requires fundamental re-examination.
Okay, so that's because they were all mad about our...
Yeah. Well, and they support, like, that organization basically is the only social welfare net for the stateless Palestinians, refugees spread all over the Middle East.
Any other,
702 is up for Cloyder to vote today in the Senate.
Oh, so that already passed the House then? Now, is this the same bill, or is there going to be reconciliation?
This is, I think, post-reconciliation.
Oh,
That's what the Senate has to agree to. Like, oh yeah, that's fine. That's what we passed.
Okay.
Is basically the reason for that. Other than that, I guess there's the conference on North Korea this week. We'll see. We might be reporting next week on what they decided. But considering the North and South Korean sides are talking in Korea, I don't think there's going to be too much political support for additional sanctions, like, you know, the American government would probably want.
Yeah. You think South Korea might actually have a problem with that?
It's tough to negotiate with someone while you're trying to put the boot harder on their throat.
But we're not negotiating with them, right?
No, we're not involved, but South Korea is. So.
Do we... I almost find it hard to believe we consider them an ally anymore. That's just my low opinion of our foreign policy right now. I just feel like Stephen Miller's like, but they're Korea!
Well, Trump has never had that any... Well, he wasn't very positive on Korea even during the campaign because there was the South Korean trade talks where they wanted to create the free trade zone or pact between the two countries, or between us and them.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, and he came out incredibly strongly against that.
He campaigns against all free trade, but...
Right, and he campaigned against Americans spending money overseas for military, and that's one of the posters for that effort, South Korea.
But he, governs. Oh, I guess he got us out of TPP, but he's keeping us in NAFTA.
So far.
Yeah, so far. I think I just saw reported this week that he's like, well, maybe... The administration is considering walking back its anti-NAFTA stance or something like that.
So that'd be great. While Canada's hosting this large diplomatic conference in Vancouver, co-hosted by the United States is like, I don't know about all that friendship we've been having.
Yeah.
Oh, easy. Trudeau. I wouldn't call us friends.
Sadly, is in the past couple days, the lead singer of the Cranberries died.
While recording in London,
Dolores O'Riordan. One of my favorite bands when I was a kid, so... Well, it was a sad one to hear.
She wasn't even that
old.
No,
I think she had mental health issues and a little bit of substance abuse issues. I guess she... Abused as a child, and yeah, tough life. Tough life. Zombie is still one of my favorite songs to just wail, just sing at the top of my lungs in the car. So yeah, I can't remember if we talked about it in the beginning, but Bannon was subpoenaed in the Mueller investigation. He was talking with the Senate Intelligence One today. It's the first subpoena for the Mueller investigation. There's
right.
Loads of speculation about what does that mean? What does that mean? You know, a little broadly speaking, a little point that's been on my mind recently. There's a podcast called Slow Burn about the Watergate investigation. I've been listening to that every week. And the idea is that it kind of puts you in the seat of being like, you know, like today, like you're someone who listens to the news, watches the news, reads the news. And, like, what that would have been like back then. And one thing that has been eating at me is how so much of what's going on right now happened then. Even the crime itself is somewhat similar. You know, a president hiding a theft of DNC information. It's... Similar partisan breakdown. There's a special prosecutor. There's legislative investigations. It's just a lot of parallels. And what gets me is, on one hand, that the administration primarily, but kind of his party in general, are using so many of the same tactics of, you know, muddying the waters with their rhetoric. And then on the other hand, that they are so shameless that they, you know, like, this has happened in living memory. I mean, not our life, but in living memory, this has happened before. And it's like they're acting like it's an impossible thing when, like, that's in history books. It's a prominent recent thing. We could ask old people about it. And I don't know, it just, this concept of it being, like, no one's learned a lesson, is what I'm saying. Or they learned only the wrong lessons. And it, I don't know, I mean, it's just sad. It's just, like, you know, like, as someone who likes history and the whole thing, you know, you learn history so you don't, you know, repeat the mistakes. It's just, I'm watching it before my eyes every day in the news. It's like one of the biggest parts of history over the last half of the 20th century, and just ignored.
I wouldn't say that the Russian thing is ignored by in any way.
No.
If anything, it's kind of absorbed oxygen from perhaps other problems like Puerto Rico.
No, I don't mean like it's ignored in the sense of the media not reporting it. I mean, the media is reporting a big, you know, a scandalous story, regardless. What I mean is the actual people involved, say Republicans on, you know, chairman Republicans for, you know, Devin Nunes in the House, and those folks are governing and they're blocking it and defending the president as if it's impossible that the president could be a criminal much like Nixon was. And it really shouldn't be, like, it shouldn't be getting to the same point as it got then. Like, it shouldn't have to be such a big news story, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, yeah, in the end, if it brought down a presidency, of course, huge news story. But so much of why it's taken up so much oxygen is because they are either putting out, like, counter-propaganda, they are extending these investigations, making them longer than they need to be.
They're attacking people involved in it, or people connected to it.
Yeah, like, it's so disappointing to me that this has become what it's become when it's just to protect like the biggest loser in the history of politics. It's so disappointing. Yeah, I mean, if they weren't protecting him, we maybe would just have President Pence by now. And I mean, not that that's awesome, but like, we wouldn't have to be dealing with this madness of Trump anymore. Like, they've extended this, and so that's why it just keeps built. It just keeps sucking. It's just a fire that keeps raging, sucking up the oxygen. And on one hand, it's easy to blame, you know, the media that likes reporting on scandals. It's easy to blame, particularly kind of the liberal elite for focusing on it. But in the end, to me, it's the people protecting him.
Right, the people who go on those liberal elite news shows and defend him.
Yeah.
Those are the people, yeah. Especially the elected officials. Yeah. 2018 is coming. Well, I guess it's here, but the election's coming now.
Yeah. Well, anyways, what were you trying to say that it sucks up oxygen from? I'll let you take some of that.
Oh, like, for instance, on the Senate Intelligence Committee, I'm pretty sure, like, we could look at the AFRICOM segment and see perhaps better uses of their time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a lot of committees, and then
even in general, like, Puerto Rico has probably gotten far, like, orders of magnitude less coverage than the Russia thing, even though, like, half the island still doesn't have power.
Yeah, and say this was a different time, that Puerto Rico story would be sticking around, putting more pressure right, like on the Katrina administration, but it doesn't put... Yeah, that's what I was going to say, like Katrina, yeah. But it doesn't put pressure on them. It's not a huge black eye for the administration.
No. Which it should be.
Yeah, and... But it's like, nothing can... I don't know what can... Like, would it be hurting him anymore?
The reason why Puerto Rico should, in my mind, be a bigger failure is that it speaks to, like, administrative failures. Like, the one thing, basically the only thing that an executive has to do is just administer well.
Yeah, that's their actual job.
Like,
it
wouldn't be a big deal if he didn't do press conference, as if he didn't create so many headlines through his own incompetence. And it would be easier for his, you know, his base to... Because, you know, if you attack him on an ideological line, they're just going to reflexively support him. But if you're like, he don't do his job right, they're going to be like, well, I guess I do my job right, but he don't, so that means I should not support him. Like, anybody with any semblance of work ethic or intellectual honesty should oppose him, but if you keep attacking him on these ideological lines, there's no basis for a common agreement that, yes, this guy is an incompetent failure and a besmirch a stain on American history.
It's hard to say given the climate, but I'm not even totally true or totally sold that that's true, because there are often reports on his capability and how poor it is, and you just see pushback from someone.
But none of these scandals are sticking.
I don't know. It's an interesting what if, because I mean you'd still have like Sarah Sanders being like, he is the most hardworking president in the history of the world. I see him work. We all see him work so hard every day.
Okay, but this also is another issue that they can attack him on where it doesn't actually affect anybody's life. For instance, if you attacked him on his social spending, or even if you attacked him on military policy, it would be real easy to split up his base very easily.
Yeah, and I think... I mean, I tend to think, if I were to put a prediction down, I would actually say that most Democrats will be campaigning this year on the tax bill than Russia.
Right. We haven't even seen that.
I mean, the thing is, if you're a Democratic candidate, you don't really need to bring up the Russia investigation. And I think it speaks to your point, is that that's, you know, Doug Jones didn't talk about that.
Nope.
And I think it speaks to your point, is that it doesn't directly affect so many people. So you can't just talk about Republican orthodox policy like the tax bill. You have to bring up, if you're campaigning against the Republicans this year, you have to bring up their party's treatment of the president. So I don't think you have to specifically bring up Russia, but you have to talk about, say, things like the shithole comments, his general racism, his decorum, his tweets, his... You have to tie Trump to the Republicans. Because I think he's a losing issue. But if you just campaign on, you know, public policy, I don't think that gets as many Democrats. I don't know. I could be wrong. I'd like to say that's not true.
I mean, a better public policy debate would get a lot more people involved.
What's more popular, the president or the GOP tax bill? Maybe the president is more popular.
He absolutely is more popular than that.
Yeah,
tax
so...
bill. Huh. I'm sure Trump's score is going to be a common frame of reference, too, once the elections get more towards the primaries and general elections. Like, what is the incumbent's Trump score? How often do you agree with him?
Yeah, that's still tying it back to him, though.
Well, and then you can just start picking apart everything that they did.
I mean, if I were a Democrat, I would, depending on my exact audience, who I thought they were, what I thought they cared about, I would be focusing on two things. I'd be focusing on the racism of the president and the GOP's seeming complicity with that racism. Racism's not popular. I mean, it's luckily, it's not a popular thing. There are a lot of racists, but it's not a majority by any means.
There are a lot of racists. They're very vocal, but they're not anything close to a majority.
And then I would also focus on a few really glaring bad details about the general Republican platform. Pick out some things in the GOP tax scam. You know, talk about... because imagine what they're going to be doing this year. You know, he's going to be going after Medicaid. Paul Ryan, he's going to be going after Medicaid and Social Security.
Requirements on Medicare. I can't believe we didn't bring that up.
Yeah, that should have been in the first segment. Yeah, Kentucky's
work requirements
make a lot of people work.
Oh, are you? Yeah, you disabled? That don't matter. Get on the phone. Make you some money. Sorry, I shouldn't use such a denigrating accent.
I mean, more so nowadays, you should use a strong Midwestern accent.
I suppose.
They're gonna... he's popular in rural Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and Indiana. But yeah, who aren't aware, the Kentucky is making you have to work a minimum 20 hours if you are able to work. There's been some pushback, both because that's never been a requirement of Medicaid ever, and because theoretically it actually won't affect many people. So what's the point of it?
Well, the vast majority of those people are disabled or retired.
Yeah,
so.
To me it seems like there's going to be some looseness with the language, and that's going to cause problems for them. There's going to be some disabled people that are going to have to work, even though that's what they're saying will not happen.
Yeah, but they have to create examples of it happening, or else this whole policy was just obviously discriminatory.
Now, yeah. I was surprised to hear, though, and this isn't so much a justification for it by any means, even though it's a stat brought up as one, I don't think that's, to me, that it doesn't go together as directly as their governor would like to think. But I was surprised that a third of their state is on Medicaid. You know what he was saying? It was interesting. He kept saying, you know, we have 200,000 jobs open in Kentucky, and, you know, there's jobs open all over the country. But every time he'd talk about jobs being open in Kentucky, he would talk about, in general, there being jobs open in America. It was almost as if he was implying these people should leave Kentucky.
Wow.
And he didn't say that, but... Every time he brought up the work situation, this is on PBS NewsHour, I think yesterday. Every time he brought it up, he just kept talking about jobs being available. It's like across the country there are jobs available. I'm like, but you're in Kentucky, so you want these people to go to New York or Arizona, Alaska for jobs?
Not here.
Yeah, that I don't know. That was interesting. He's I was surprised by the move, although I probably shouldn't be. I could totally see Paul Ryan pushing for something like that for a bill this year.
I suppose. I'm surprised Scott Walker. I mean, this is also allowing Scott Walker here in Wisconsin to. Demand your analysis for Medicaid and Medicare benefits, right?
They do it for welfare benefits here. Or that's what was just passed. No, not welfare. Food. Food stamps or whatever they call it. That's what it's for here.
But it's a stretch. It wouldn't be much of a stretch for them to be like, well, if you're on Medicaid, you also have to be...
Well, it's just like the working for welfare back in the 90s. As soon as it passed here, it spread like wildfire.
Yep, that Wisconsin Works program.
Yeah, and so I think, in fact, wasn't that taken up by the Congress shortly after it happened here? Yeah, so that's... I could totally see that. If not something to try and do this year at some point in the future. But I definitely think he's going to be telling us how that's going to save us trillions of dollars. He's going to be like, it'll make up for that terrible tax bill we did last year.
I mean, hopefully he has to get kicked upstairs like Brownback did.
Paul Ryan?
In Kansas, Governor Walker. Hopefully he'll have to find some other job because he can't be governor anymore.
Hopefully there are no more false alarms on nuclear threats. Hopefully there's no real alarms on nuclear threats either. And we'll all be keeping an eye on the... keeping the government open. Hopefully federal employees can both go to work next Monday and we can have a bunch of dreamers stay in this country. We'll see though. Alright, I'm Peter Elbro. You can find us at Bloated Nemesis and at Green_Weird on Twitter. And thank you. This has been Tell Me What You Think. Be good.
Break your chains!